while hearing Raggaha of the king. Zairisham with envy. Aha said. Atikaravata being too proud. So translation, while the child Dhruva Maharaj was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child, and with great pride, she began to speak so as if to be heard by the king himself. So, purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The king, of course, was equally affectionate toward both his sons, Uttama and Dhruva. So he had a natural inclination to take Dhruva as well as Uttama on his lap. But because of his favoritism towards his queen, Saruchi, he could not welcome Dhruva Maharaj despite his feelings. King Uttanapada's feeling was understood by Saruchi, and therefore with great pride she began to speak about the king's affection for her. This is the nature of woman. If a woman understands that her husband regards her as a favorite and is especially affectionate to her, she takes undue advantage. These symptoms are visible even in such an elevated society as the family of Swayambhuva Manu. Therefore, it is concluded that the feminine nature of woman is present everywhere. Okay. So tata shakirsham hanam tam sapatnyastanaiham dhruvam suruchi shunvato ragya shirsham ahalti garvata. So om gana timadandasha gananjana shalakya chakshur unmiritam yena tasmai shikarve namaha. So I think all of you know the story of Dhruva Maharaj, right? I think that everybody in India knows that story. That Dhruva Maharaj was the son of Suniti, and his brother Uttama was the son of Suruchi. And actually the word Suruchi means good taste. It's interesting, all these names in Sanskrit. Su means good, Ruchi means to have a taste. So all these names in Sanskrit actually have a significance when they name a child a certain name. Like the sage Durvasa is called Durvasa because he has a bad mood. Durvasa means bad face or bad mood. So similar to Duryodhana and Yudhisthira, you know, determined in battle. So all these names are very significant. And a child is given these names based on actually astrological calculation. You know, that's how they know what type of child he's going to be. I mean, with Duryodhana, for example, they knew that he was going to be a bad child from the beginning. And therefore, Vidura, he said to the Kuru dynasty, especially the elderly members like Dhritarashtra, he said, you should kill him because he's going to be the destruction, the cause of the destruction of the dynasty. So anyway, so Suruchi was the favorite wife. And Suniti was the least favorite wife. So what you see is in the cases where there's polygamy, I think you all know what polygamy is, right? Polygamy means man accepts more than one wife. That generally there's problems. Just like the word sapatni is very similar to the expression sapatna, which means, sapatni means with one's wife or co-wives. And also, it can also indicate, if you pronounce it a little bit differently, with one's enemy. So you always find this nature, in the material world, not only women, but also men, that are envious of each other. And of course, the most extreme example I can think of, were the wives of Chitra Ketu. Chitra Ketu was a great personality, and he wanted to have his son, but, what are you doing? Alright. None of his wives could give him a son, so he kept having more wives. And he eventually ended up with 10 million wives. That's like a, how much is the population of Delhi?
It's
1.5 more than 1.5, about 15 million, yeah. So, so eventually, anyways, so he ended up 10 million. I mean, that's a major city. And everyone was his wife. And so then what happened is that he got the benediction to have a son. Of course, that son was named Harsha Shilka, which means happiness and distress. And he had that one son and the 9,999,999 wives conspired against the child who was the son of the one wife, Kritadyuti, and killed the kid. There's so much envy, isn't it? So that's why it's generally not recommended to have more than one wife. And of course, in the story of the Ramayana, you have Dasarath, and he had Kaikeyi, and she was the one who caused all the trouble. So you have all these different stories in the Vedic literatures of people with two wives, or three wives, or 10 wives, or 10 million wives. And it's invariably, you find trouble from the whole thing. So it's not recommended. Devotees should not think of polygamy. Although in traditional system in India, it was there. Even I know people, older people in India, that have more than one wife. I'm sure some of you may know some people that have more than one wife. But it's just trouble. And actually, the only person who's authorized to have more than one wife is Krishna. Krishna had 16,108 wives, and he was so well off, he was able to provide a house for each and every wife. A house, 10 children, servants. So if that's the case, then you can have more than one wife. If you can provide a house, servant, cars, what else? Food, saris. I mean, like Prabhupada said, to keep a wife happy, there's several different ways. One way is you give children. There has to be children, there has to be food, clothes, and jewelry. Jewelry, I think you know what jewelry means. Like bangles. Like a woman has to have a lot of bangles on the gold bangles, not plastic. Nowadays they're wearing plastic, right? I've seen many of the ladies with plastic bangles. Gold colored, but plastic. So, anyway, so therefore it's better to have one wife. To be like Lord Rama. Rama had this vow. Eka Patni Vrata. Just one wife. And he was so chaste, so devoted to Sita Devi that even when she was exiled or sent away, that he didn't even think of marrying anyone else. In fact, when he got ready to perform the Ashwamedha sacrifice, then he even had like a deity of Sita Devi put there instead of bringing Sita Devi back, because he couldn't bring her back at that time. So Lord Ram never got married again. He was on the earth for millions of years, and he never got married again. So anyway, these are some good examples. So in this particular story, we have Dhruva wanting to sit out of his father's lap, which is kind of natural. And Suruchi saying to King Uttanapada, can't do that, because you're not my son, so get out of here. So Dhruva Maharaj, being naturally a Kshatriya, didn't like that. A Brahman's response would have been different. A Brahman would have said, Hare Krishna, Krishna's mercy, I have to become detached. Like you see in the case of Narada. When Narada was very young, he was taken care of his mother, who was a maid, by his mother, who was a maidservant. And then his mother died. His mother died when he was 5 years old. So what did he do? He just started wandering and chanting Hare Krishna. Or at least Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he became very detached and devoted to Krishna. So that's the difference between a Brahmin and a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya, if something happens or someone does something to you, you get angry with them and you want to do better than them. Like Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a kingdom better than that of Lord Brahma. So that's a Kshatriya response. Where a Brahmin response would be, that's Krishna's mercy. Krishna wants to detach me from this material world. Right? Like if something happens, someone, you get sick. I mean, just like yesterday, you know, I was feeling a little sick and had toothache or something like that. So I was just thinking, you know, what is Krishna trying to teach me? That this material world is temporary, I'm so attached to this body, so not going to keep this body forever, you can't enjoy this material world. Because sometimes when you're young, you're actually thinking so much you can enjoy the world, like you're all young, and you're thinking, I got my whole life ahead of me, finish my education, get married, go and work, wherever you're going to work, you know, IBM, hopefully not a call center. There's not much money in the call centers. So I'm going to work, get married, have a family, and get myself a car. It's like almost thinking of when he's going to get a car now.
Yeah, we're
about to do one. I know. Have a car. I want to get all these things. I'll get nice clothes. Like that. And so there's this whole plan, but it's, the thing is, by the action of time factor, all these things are taken away anyway. Even if you don't have someone like Suruchi who kicks you off your father's lap, still, eventually, Hani Hani Bhutanika Chanti Molyam, the most wonderful thing is that, you know, we're going to leave this body and leave everything. We don't think like that. We actually think that we're going to make a permanent solution, we're not going to die. Of course, that's the discussion from the Mahabharata between Yudhisthira Maharaj and Yamaraj. You know, what's the most wonderful thing? Hani Hani Bhutani Gachanti Yamalayam. Then again and again, we see everybody die or go to Yamaraj. And then we think, we're not going to do it. You know, it's not for me. Kim Ascharya Atapuram. It is so wonderful, it says in Sanskrit, that people think like that. So, anyway, so we have to develop a brahminical attitude. Like if something happens, of course we're already old, it's not going to happen like Dhruva Maharaj to us, but if something happens or someone hurts us or doesn't allow us to have what we want or someone robs us or we get sick, you know, these things happen in this material world. We should try to see Krishna's hand behind it. And the perfect example of that is Dharma the bull that was being beaten by the personality of Kali. That's a story from the first canto of Bhagavatam. And Dharma the bull, when Dharma was asked by Parikshit Maharaj, who has done this to you, basically his explanation was, it's Krishna who's arranging all these things. You can't blame Kali. Of course, Kali had to be chastised because that was Parikshit Maharaj's duty. But you can't blame Kali because it was Krishna's arrangement. So whatever happens to us is Krishna's arrangement. If you're not a devotee, of course, it's karma. And if you are a devotee, it's Krishna's arrangement. And it's Krishna's arrangement to bring you closer to Him. Try to remember that. Whatever happened, disease, accidents, problems. I mean, just like the other night, we were coming from the airport. It took 7 hours to get here. So, you know, it's one thing. I could have gotten angry at the driver, which I just didn't do, because it wouldn't have accomplished anything. And the wipers didn't work, right? I mean, it was almost like a funny movie, you know, funny Bollywood movie. Like, everything was wrong. The wiper, you know, he had to come out and try to bend the wipers, they still didn't work. Remember that? And he was throwing water on the windshield, had to stop every 5 minutes to wipe the windshield up. The heater didn't work in the car. What else didn't work? I mean, oh yeah, and then we almost ran out of CNN. The what? Yeah, fog light wasn't there. We almost ran out of CNG. You know, we couldn't find a gas station with CNG. You know, we couldn't see in front of us. I mean, it was just like, in 7 hours, never taken me that long to get here. Usually it's 2.5 hours. Maximum 3. But 2.5 hours, never taken 7 hours. And then 7 hours, and also, you know, I was just coming off a plane, which is like 24 hours of traveling, you know, from where I was in the United States. And so instead of getting angry, I just thought, you know, what is Krishna teaching me? And then also I had a toothache at the same time. So, and you know, Krishna arranges all these things. So just thinking, you know, Krishna's just trying to make me understand the nature of this world. Krishna's put me in that circumstance. So that's a Brahman attitude. Kshatriya attitude is you start to get angry or something like that. Shudra attitude is you just go to sleep. And a Vaishya attitude is you jump out of the car and try to pay for someone else to take you. Or you ask for your money back. That's a Vaishya attitude. So you have to see what you are. Of course, everybody has their own nature. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Although Prabhupada did indicate he wanted us to develop a Brahminical attitude towards this world. And in this way, no matter what happens, then we don't get angry and spend so much time wasting our human form of life. We spend the maximum amount of time cultivating pure Krishna consciousness. Okay, so we'll allow you to ask questions, because I'm sure you have questions about Krishna consciousness. Your video, you're taking this video, okay. You put it on the internet or something?
Maybe.
Okay, questions?
Yeah, here it's very difficult to, escape into devotees, but still, they could not do according to the world, they could not understand each other, and they get envious how we are doing, and they have independent mentality.
Who are you talking about now?
In the devotees in the
temple.
Yeah, in the bases, in the campus too.
Yeah.
Like friends. So how to cultivate and how to become favorable and how to...
So the devotees don't have the right mentality you're talking about, or?
Independent mentality.
Independent means, why don't you define what that means practically?
Independence.
I know what the word means, but I mean...
If I say, to get up early,
oh, everyone wants to do their own. There has to be some training in cooperation, training in teamwork. Just like all of you, if you're going to work in the real world, in a company or something like that, you have to learn about teamwork. Actually, even in the modern companies, they have teamwork exercises where they have you do different things together just to develop a spirit of working together. Actually, in French, it's called esprit de corps. Anyway, you don't know French. You don't know French either. No?
Little.
So there has to be a common... Let's see, a common goal and actually a relationship between the devotees. You can't force it. I mean, it can't be forced. There has to be friendship. Like Prabhupada talked in the Nectar of Instruction when he was talking about this verse, Dadati Prajagranati Guyamakyati Prichati Bhunte Bhojate Chaiva, that devotees should engage in different loving exchanges. Like giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts. So in other words, the relationship has to be there. If the relationship is there, people will voluntarily, cooperate and work together. But if you try to impose it, like one reason, actually just analyzing the situation further, one reason why people, the devotees in the university, they're just not cooperating together. They want to express their independence because they've been at home for so many years where they were forced to do things by their parents, and now they're in a stage of rebellion. I know the culture. Like somehow or other, in India it's very strict in the homes usually. Like sometimes you're even afraid of your father.
Yeah.
It's not like that in America. In America you're not afraid of your father. Your father's afraid of you. What about Croatia?
Same.
It's the same.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, by the time you hit 11 or 12, you're telling your parents what to do in the Western world. In India, the parents are very strict. And if you don't do what they say, there's the stick, lati. And you get the stick. I'm not going to ask who here has gotten the stick. But anyway, somehow or other, going to the university is the first time that most of the men have freedom. So it's just like, you know, for so many years you've been actually kept captive or captured or captive. And then all of a sudden they let you out, you're going to start running. It's like if you see it, if they take a wild animal, put it in a cage, somehow or other, open the cage, the animal starts running.
Yeah.
Right? So in the same way, I think that's going to be pretty much a standard at the in many of the Indian universities for right now, that they just want to, you know, they want to savor or enjoy their freedom. So basically you can't force people to do things. You have to do it with love, you know, through prasannam and everything like that.
Yes.
It doesn't do any good. If you get angry with them, they'll say, you're not my father, I don't have to listen to you. You're not my guru, you're not my father, you're not my teacher.
Yeah.
You know, so, because people, they will listen, people will listen to the teacher, the guru, and the father. It's a very, in India you have what we call a very hierarchical society.
Yes.
You understand what I mean by hierarchy?
Yes.
It's very hierarchical.
Yeah.
In the West we have, it's not hierarchical. Well, it's, you know, everybody's the same. Everybody's the same. So, the only way you're going to get cooperation, there's two ways to get cooperation here. There's one, you have some big authority figure, like a guru there at the university, which you don't have, obviously. And the other one is just you have loving exchanges between the devotees. And I think the second alternative is preferable to the first alternative.
Yeah.
You know, to have nice relationships.
Yes.
And I've seen in the New Delhi temple, the devotees generally have very good relationships with each other. I spent some time there. One time I was there for Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day. And a very nice relationship. All the brahmacharis they had with each other. And they were working cooperatively.
Yes.
So be tolerant and encourage everyone to develop nice relationships. Exchange prasadam, give gifts. Take prasadam together. I mean, so many things you can do. Then people will cooperate. But cooperation is a two-way street. It means it's not like I tell you what to do and you have to cooperate with me. That's not cooperation. That's slavery. Cooperation means I ask you what you'd like to do and you tell me what you'd like to do and then we work out something. That's cooperation. Cooperate means two parties back and forth rather than one party dictating.
Mutual understanding.
Yeah. It's mutual. Exactly. That's what the word cooperation is used. And actually, people misuse the word cooperation.
Yes.
Many times you'll have the authority or even your parents say to you, you have to cooperate with me. But that's not really the meaning of the word.
That is imposing the things.
That's imposing, yeah. You have to cooperate. Why don't they just say, I'm your boss. You have to listen to me. You have to do what I say. But using the word cooperation is not applicable in that particular context. All right?
So one has to change his outlook towards the individual.
Towards other people, yes. Yeah. One has to be compassionate and be empathic and see others as valuable persons, you know.
Yes.
Not just be using people. And the problem with a hierarchical society is there's a tendency just to think about yourself and to use the people under you. And anyway, that's the opposite of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means paradukha-dukhi, that one thinks more about the happiness of others than one's own happiness. And if you do that, everyone will cooperate. Eventually. It may take a year or two. But it will happen.
It will happen on its own, by its own.
By its own, yeah. It will happen. You don't have to force it. You don't have to go to
and
the...
And there will be a harmonious environment right again.
Yeah, and it will be long-term.
Long-term.
Long-term cooperation over the years. Like I remember, I mean, I used to do the opposite. I used to be a brahmachari many years ago. And in order to get people to work, I used to impose authority on people. Like I'd go to the brahmacharis in the morning and wake them up in the morning. Go to their sleeping in sleeping bags. And I'd wake them up by playing the cartels by their ears. And they would get very angry and go back to sleep and not cooperate. And sometimes I would even drag their sleeping bag into the shower and turn on the water. That doesn't work. Never worked for me, and it won't work for anybody else. So, yeah, it's better to have loving exchanges. That's much better. All right, other questions?
Another question. See, this question is not my favorite question. Because in Indian system, they have like caste system, like Brahmana, Kshatriya.
Yeah, caste system, yeah. Caste
system. So, like, my son friend is from the scheduled caste.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I know what scheduled caste is.
So, he's saying, why God made this system. So, one have distinguished each other, like other people, they are depressed into the lower people. And why this system is made by Krishna to differentiate all the people?
Well, the caste system was not made by Krishna. The Varnashram system was made by Krishna. The Varnashram system, according to Krishna in the Gita, Chatur Varnam Mayashrustam, Gunakarma Vibhagasha. That is, one is given a particular role in society according to his qualities and work, not according to his birth. Birth has nothing to do with it. I mean, if someone has the qualities of a Brahmin, even if he's from a Shudra family, he should be considered a Brahmin. And if a Brahmin has the qualities of a Shudra, someone in a Brahmin family has the qualities of a Shudra, he should be considered a Shudra. It's all based on qualities. Later on, that became transformed into the caste system. You know why? Because of the Brahmins, the so-called Brahmanists. They wanted to exploit everyone else, because the Brahmanas have, in the traditional system, have a monopoly on performing sacrifices. You know what a monopoly is? Yeah, I mean, they have they're the only ones with the right to perform sacrifices, like namakarana, giving of the name, the griha pravesh. I mean, all these ceremonies that are part of the samskaras for normal human beings. And what to speak of the antyeshti, the funeral ceremony. So, in other words, even if you wanted to die, you had to have a brahmana to perform your ceremony. And you couldn't die without a brahmana. At least have a funeral without a brahmana.
Right from birth to death.
What's that?
Right from birth to death.
Yeah, everything. Even before birth. You know, there's a ceremony for the safe delivery of the child before the birth. Then there's the name-giving ceremony. Then there's the going-to-school ceremony. Then there's the getting married, the graduation, the marriage ceremony. Then there's the house ceremony, griha pravesh. There's so many ceremonies, samskaras.
Both it is, childbirth.
Childbirth.
Both
it is. Yeah, birthday, yeah. The birthday, even the Garbhadhana samskara is done by Brahmanas. So therefore you had to have Brahmanas to do anything in life. So they had a monopoly. And when you have a monopoly, did you ever study economics in the university? About the law of supply and demand?
Yes, absolutely.
What happens when you have a limited supply and your demand is pretty high? What happens? Can you tell me? Something goes up.
Yes. The economy, basically the price.
Price goes up.
Yes.
The price goes up.
Priority goes.
Yeah. So let's say if many people could become Brahmanas, the price would go down.
Yes.
Let's say if I'm the only Brahmana in this whole area and you want to get married, I can make my own price. I can name my own price.
Rising inflation.
Yes, inflation. When you have a, you either have to ration things, which happens sometimes, or the prices go up, which is a type of rationing. So, just like in India, when the people want to increase the price of some object, they hoard it first. You understand? It's a common thing. They hoard it first, and then in a time of scarcity, they pay.
This just happened a few months back.
Really?
Yes.
What did they hoard?
With onion.
Onions and onions. Yeah, I remember that. There was an onion protest here in India.
Yes.
So that's done by the businessmen. So the Brahmanas wanted to maintain a monopoly like that. And in order to do that, they say, someone can only become a Brahmin if they're born as a Brahmin. And they were able to do that. And that, but they were rejected by a number of people. Actually, the Buddhists rejected that. Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also rejected that particular philosophy. That one can only be a Brahmin if they're born in a Brahminical family. And then practically, in the Vedic literatures, you see people who are born in Brahminical families who weren't Brahmins, like Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya. He was called a Brahma Bandhu, which means the friend or the relative of a Brahmin, but he wasn't a Brahmin. So, anyway, so we reject this hereditary designation of Brahminical status. So the caste system came later, but it's the fault of the Brahmins. It was also the fault of the caste system, which is the fault of the Brahmins, that allowed so many people to be converted to other religions.
Yes, this is true.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Like the Muslims came in and they said, well, we'll accept everybody. We'll accept this, you know, scheduled caste, you know, the Malechas, Shudras, everybody. And the Brahmanas, they were just so particular, they said, they wouldn't accept people of lower caste. So the Muslims were able to take advantage of that, and the Christians.
Mishnah is there converting the people in the Deccan Plateau.
Yeah.
A lot of people from Chhattisgarh, they are converting to
Christianity. Because
they're feeling good there. They are not being discriminated.
Yeah. Because they have equality there.
Equality.
You understand? So it was actually, this whole caste system is almost destroyed in India.
Yes.
Allowed other religions to come in. Very bad, this caste system.
This is entirely politics on the basis of caste and religion.
Yeah, by the Brahmins, actually. So-called Brahmins.
So-called Brahmins.
In the Bhagavatam it says that many people, many demons will be born in Brahmin families in Kali Yuga. Not everybody who's born in a Brahmin family is a demon. But many, many times it's like that. And you see, the people are exploiting in the name of being Brahmanas. They're taking charge of a temple and keeping the money in the hundi, the donation box. Or they're selling the property of the deities. Like in Vrindavan, you have these Goswami temples in Vrindavan, and those temples originally owned a lot of the city of Vrindavan, but the families, the Goswami families who took over those temples, descendants of the original people who were assigned by the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they sold the properties. Practically all of Loy Bazaar. I don't know if any of you know what Lloyd
is. They have the authority, but they are misusing the power.
They're misusing it, yeah. And then you go to the holy place and the pandas attack you for money. You know, so in the name of Brahminical behavior, they're acting like Vaishyas or Shudras. You know, they're just attached to their particular caste status and taking economic advantage of that caste status. So anyway, so that's the caste system. Unfortunate. It's destroying, or has destroyed, a large part of Indian culture. I mean, have all these castes, especially here Even here in Govardhan, you have a snake caste here.
Yes.
Did you know that? There's a caste of snake handlers. There's none of the Bandis, who are the, you know, the sweep the road and clean up the stool and everything like that. But you have snake handler caste. They're the ones who walk around. I don't know if you saw yesterday, there was a boy walking around with a cobra in a basket. And there's a village here where they all live. It's right near Kushima Sarovara. And that's a caste. They have the subcaste and the caste. I mean, it's incredible. And then in certain parts of India, like Gujarat, if you want to get married, you not only have to marry someone in the same caste, but there's a subcaste.
Clan.
There's a sub-clan, like the Prajapati caste. That's a subcaste in Gujarat. And you have to marry someone in the sub-subcaste if you want to get... I mean, that's crazy. Isn't it?
It prevails all over in India.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, all this discrimination, that's part of this, you know, hierarchical type of concept where, you know, everything is either higher or lower. And you don't respect people. I mean, I see here in Vasundhara, you know, this place here, that there's people working here and, you know, doing the gardening and everything. They're all considered Shudra caste, actually. But I make friends with them and they're very happy because they, people who are in charge, they treat them like dogs. You understand? The people who run this Vasundhara, this big, big family, it's the Shri group, which has many, many developments around here. I think it's Agarwal's family. I mean, most of the Vaishyas here are Agarwal's. So, but they treat the workers like dogs. Terrible. But when I see them, I want to treat them like human beings. I make friends with them. So they all, you know, they all like us. They like me because I make friends with them. I say Hare Krishna to them. But for the other people, you know, think they're so high class, they treat them very badly. This is not nice. I mean, they're human beings with the same feelings that you and I have. You have to treat others badly. I mean, you get a karmic reaction for that. You're going to get treated. You know, if you treat someone badly because they're a Shudra, next life, guess where you're going to be? You know, the owners here, maybe next life they'll become dogs on the property. Or at least workers, gardeners on the property. But there has to be respect. And during the time of Lord Ramchandra, during the time of Lord Ramchandra, even a dog could come in front of him and make a complaint. You know that story? That a dog came to Lord Ram and complained that he was being beaten by a Brahmin. And then, it was an interesting story. The dog had the right to go to Lord Ram, the talking dog, obviously. And he went to Lord Ram and complained that this Brahmin has beaten me. And Lord Ram said, "All right, so what's the punishment?" And the dog, they were thinking about what the punishment should be. Then the dog said, "Well, let that brahmana become the head of a mandali." You know what a mandali is, right? You know, like a Ram mandali or something like that. And everyone was astounded. Why should that brahmana be rewarded for punishing a dog? And then the dog explained that when you're the head of a particular mandali or religious organization, you have to suffer the karma of everybody else in that organization. And the dog said, "In my previous life, I was the head of a mandali, that's why I became a dog." That's an interesting story from the Ramayana. So, anyway, so the point is we should respect all living entities, animals. I mean, in India, you know, talk about the land of Dharma, but people disrespect the animals. There's more cows that are killed here than practically any other country in the world. Most of the world's leather comes from India. they take the cows and they march them where they can kill, to where they can kill. They march them across the state boundaries, pay a bribe, and then skin them alive, practically speaking. There's videos of this on the internet. And then, that's where the leather comes from. And India is supposed to be the land of religion. Isn't it? I mean, cows being killed, so much violence occurring, you know, you have, in Delhi you have these rapes of people. Horrible. You know, but India is the land of religion. And you know, all these things happen because people don't respect other living entities. Even human beings they don't respect. They treat their servants really badly. I mean, I stayed in someone's house in Delhi, and they're devotees, but they have these young girls as servants. You know what I'm talking about. You know, really young girls. And they treat them like they're animals. It's just not right. It's not right. I mean, this of course, a lot of that has to do with the Muslim culture that invaded India. I mean, the Muslim culture really contaminated India to a large extent. You had the Mughals, in fact. They contaminated India. But, you know, we should have respect for all living entities. And so this caste system is very disrespectful towards Krishna's parts and parcels. All right. Any other questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, how to get rid of procrastination?
Procrastination, what mode of nature does procrastination come from?
The thing is, we plan the things and we do not actually execute.
Yeah, I know, but my question is, what mode of nature? Ignorance.
It is a kind of a mode of ignorance.
Yeah, that's what Krishna says this in the Gita. There's a verse that Krishna says, the determination and the mode of ignorance is characterized by procrastination, laziness, putting off for tomorrow what you can do today. That's procrastination. Uh-oh, sounds like our guest coming. Okay, let them all in. What?
They didn't procrastinate.
They came at the right time. Wow. So how do you do that? You have to cultivate the mode of goodness. You cultivate the mode of goodness by eating food in the mode of goodness, associating with people in the mode of goodness. Krishna says in the Gita, come in. Tell them to come in. I don't want them to stand outside freezing to death. Come in. We're just finishing class, so you can just... Come in. Well, we got everybody here. It's an evasion of the ladies. Yeah, you can just listen to class. Come in. Michigani, Prema. Wow. Radha Madhava. Sankirtan. How do you go? Yeah, we're just finishing class. You can sit down and listen to the end of class. It's cold. Bada bada bada. Don't be ashamed. Okay. So, sit down. Did you get anything? Sit down. These are all these people are devotees who live in Braj. Sri Radhika is in charge of the Sundapati Mundi school. She's the boss there. Is Rupa in town? Or?
He will be coming in February.
Not till February.
Around, I think, 12 or 13.
He's in Italy right now, right? With his wife. Okay, so we're just talking about procrastination. How to overcome procrastination. Basically associate with people in the mode of goodness, have some goals, understand the temporary nature of this world. I mean, there's different methods like that. Understand you may not get another chance to do something again. But the main thing is to cultivate the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, you have a goal. In the mode of passion, you have a goal. In the mode of ignorance, you don't have a goal. In the mode of ignorance, there's no goal. It's just laziness, sleep, procrastination, etc. And that's the method I have. And then if you're still procrastinating, then just eat a lot of chili peppers. That'll get you out of procrastination. Procrastinate means to put off for tomorrow what you could do today. In other words, you're just dreaming of doing something. You say, well, I'm going to chant 16 rounds. Yeah, eventually I'll chant 16 rounds. Not now, but, you know, in the future I know I'm going to do it. That's procrastination. And so the way to overcome it is, procrastination is impelled by the mode of ignorance. The way to overcome it is to cultivate goodness or passion. And that means having a goal. In goodness, you have a goal to become self-realized or liberated. In passion, you have a goal to make money. So you decide. Either you like money or you want to get liberated. Or you want to acquire more material things. That's the mode of passion. I mean, generally, modern societies in passion and ignorance, the business interests try to keep us in passion, to keep us consuming things. And they, based upon their strategy, they try to do this thing called planned obsolescence, which is one of the main strategies they have to keep us consuming. Planned obsolescence means that something will either break down after some time, just like your iPhone, for example. Everyone likes the iPhone here. The iPhone does not have a replaceable battery. Did you know that? So after a certain number of charges, guess what happens? As they say in German, kaputt. I mean, it's finished. And then you have, if you want to have the battery in place, you have to send it to Apple and spend 100 euros to have the battery in place for your 5-year-old iPhone. So that's planned obsolescence. Another type of planned obsolescence is style. Like, for example, let's say you bought an iPhone 4S, which is what I have. And then people are thinking, why don't you have the 5 or the 5S? And next year it'll be the 6. And so, you know, you're walking around with the 4S and people are looking at you like you're an idiot. Because you only have the 4S. It's like that. With many of the wealthy people, I'm sure in India, it's like that, isn't it? They don't have latest styles or anything like that?
Some people
like that. I mean, the very wealthy, you know, sophisticated people. Like if you pull out an iPhone 4 and they're wealthy and you're supposed to have an iPhone 5S or something. Or let's say you go to someone's house and you're only driving a Suzuki. Maruti. And they have a Tata Sumo or a Mercedes or something like that. So planned obsolescence is that you actually have to keep replacing things. Like computers, for example. All right, computers or something, but it's obvious you have to keep replacing. Even if the computer works, you won't be able to install the latest operating system because it doesn't have enough memory. The processor is, I remember, which I had, what was it, Windows, yeah, I had a previous version of Windows XP on one computer. And then I wanted to install Windows 7. And then I went through, you know, went on the internet and I found out your computer can't do it. It's just the processor or something, you know, just won't handle Windows 7. And I just had to buy another computer. And now there's Windows 8. And then after that there'll be Windows 9. And you have to buy another computer. And, or they upgrade, you know, Office 97, Office 211, you know, 2011. And so they're just trying to keep you consuming things. Of course, sometimes products do get better, are able to function better, but really in the modern society, they want people to consume and throw away. In America, for example, there's so much garbage thrown away, and they send it to the rest of the world, basically.
Oh, really? It's not kept in the US?
No. No, a lot of it goes to India.
E-waste.
Yeah, e-waste. It's called e-waste. There's actually ships full of e-waste, and some of it goes to Bombay, and the people are tearing apart, some of the poor people are tearing apart the circuit boards and melting them down. You've heard about this before?
Yes.
To get lead and everything from it.
They are disposing it in the sea.
Yeah. Disposing it in the sea.
And the aquatic life is getting disturbed.
Terrible. And they're trying to extract the lead from the circuit boards too. And they're melting the lead in the same pots that they cook with. And lead is highly poisonous. That's a neuropoison, neurotoxin. And so, because America's consuming. I mean, America, it's like their styles. When I was young, of course I didn't wear a dhoti when I was young, I wore pants. And then it became popular to have what's called bell-bottom pants, which means pants go like this, bottom. And I didn't have them, and everybody was making fun of me. Because I didn't have the latest style. And so then that encourages people to consume more and more. America's based upon that, and India's coming up. But the whole world can't consume. I mean, you'd have to have another world just to put our garbage in.
Fashion statement is becoming a status symbol.
Really, fashion here.
Status symbol.
Terrible. I mean, the old days, women just put a sari on or a dhoti, a man would wear a dhoti. And that's it. And so the world is not going to, the world's resources are not going to be able to keep up with people's consumption anymore. I mean, the water tables are dropping rapidly in India, isn't it? The water is so polluted. I mean, even here in Vrindavan, the Jamuna is no longer the Jamuna. It's all the industrial waste and sewage from Delhi. You know, people go swimming in the Jamuna now and die. That's why I don't go to the Jamuna anymore. Because it's not the Jamuna. The whole Jamuna River is being diverted for the factories above Delhi. And what you're getting is when they flush the toilets in Delhi, throw away the industrial water, whatever it is, and it all comes to Vrindavan. So it's like a toilet now. It's worse. Actually, it has one of the highest levels of bacteria in it. You know, dangerous bacteria. What? Jamuna, yeah. I hope you're not going there. You go swimming in it?
No,
just drinking.
And also the boat Palikram.
Yeah, that's fine. You get in a boat, but don't get off the boat. You don't put any of the water in your mouth, do you? It's the highest level of any, higher than your toilet in the sewer system. And not only bacteria, but of heavy metals, industrial waste, I mean, chemicals that will corrode your whole body and brain, give you cancer, carcinogenic chemicals. I mean, all, you know, devotees should understand, you can't say something so spiritual that Krishna will protect me. You know, you have to, for example, we wear warm clothes. You can't say, oh, this is actually Govardhan. You don't have to wear warm clothes. I won't get sick. So in the same way, you have to be aware of the material energy. You can't be stupid. Anyway, I don't know why they take the devotees and have them drink the Jamuna water.
It was in a newspaper that two pilgrims, they drank the water and they died.
And they died.
Really?
I don't know why the temple still allows that. I mean, who took out the Jamuna? I would have just like... I mean, the temple should be responsible for the protection of the devotees. Isn't it? I mean, it's protecting the devotees from something that's obviously... I mean, you can't say it's the Jamuna. It's not the Jamuna. It's Delhi sewerage. Pure and simple. Isn't it? Sometimes people in Krishna consciousness are so blind to reality. And there's another thing. People think by eating fatty foods and sugar, they're not going to get diabetes. And if they get diabetes...
It's just an illusion, right?
It's an illusion. They think that they get diabetes, it's Krishna's mercy. No, it's their stupidity.
They should apply their common sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's people... Yeah, it's not that because you're a Hare Krishna devotee that you can do anything and the material energy will act differently. The material energy acts in a certain way. What goes up must go down. This law of gravity for devotees. I mean, it's not like some film that you just like pray for Hanuman and Hanuman appears before you, and then you see all these films like the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, and everything like that. Life is not like that. Okay, any other questions? Any questions? Thank you.
I was just thinking when you were talking about the procrastination.
Yeah.
That goal making is actually a skill you have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
They don't teach it in school, and they did a survey that the Harvard University students,
mm-hmm.
less than 30% of them have any goals.
Really?
It's like they don't, they're not teaching how to do goals. And it's something I want to learn. It's not something that, it's actually a skill you need to learn.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, our parents should actually teach us about goals. Because my parents taught me about a goal, but I didn't like it. They said, your goal is to make money. Make money, get married, have children, allow us to have grandchildren, and then retire. That's not a goal, actually. So the goal has to be something connected with something that brings you happiness. And so, therefore, I didn't have a goal until I took up Krishna consciousness. My goal, of course, was to find out about what, about life, what was life all about, you know, who am I, where have I come from. That was my goal. So I did have a goal in that respect, but not my parents' goal. Yeah, so people should think about their goals in life, you know, where do you want to be? Short-term goals, 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, where do you want to be 20 years from now, 30 years from now? Where do you want to be after you die? You can have, you know, there should be some facilitation.
Process.
It's a process, yeah. You know, you facilitate people coming up with their own goals. You can't give someone their goal. You know, you can't say, your goal is to be Krishna conscious. I order you. No, it has to come from within. Of course, if someone's a Shudra by nature, then, you know, they have to be disciplined a little bit. But we want Brahmin, Kshatriyas, or at least Vaishyas, who are goal-oriented. The Kshatriyas, they want to control more. They want to be managers. They enjoy that. Ishvara Bhava. The Brahmanas have their goal as liberation or Krishna consciousness, and the Vaishyas, acquiring things. You know, money, gold,
business.
Not necessarily the business, cow protection too. You know, Vaishyas also want to protect cows. Krishna Goraksha Vanijan Vaishya Karma Svabhavajan. That's what Krishna says. Alright, maybe we should end. It's time for prasad. Did you all eat prasad already? You didn't. You did. Okay, so who's going to make prasad for everybody here? What's that? Alright, yeah, I guess Khichdi is good anytime for everybody, right? Alright, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada.